over the past week and pitched most of it. I took care of a couple of bills. I checked my calendar. I entered appointments on my phone, but Robin and I kept an actual physical calendar on the wall. I was glad I had when I saw that the women of the church were meeting in 2 days to plan the annual holiday bake and handcraft sale. This was our big charity fundraiser, and it was an all-hands-on-deck event. I decided to take Sophie to the meeting in her carrier. Robin had missed enough work. I was looking forward to getting out of the house again, seeing fresh faces. I felt my smile fade when I had a very unpleasant thought. What if people were creepy to me? Surely, at a church gathering, people would be reminded of their Christian duty to love their neighbors. No matter how unsettling that neighbor's circumstances? By golly, I was for sure going now. I immediately began to second-guess myself. But my mother would have gone, if this had all happened to her. And maybe, if John was a lot better, Mother even might come tomorrow. My mother would singe the lady's eyebrows with one glance if they didn't make me feel welcome. I smiled just thinking about it. Not that I needed, at my age, to hide behind my mother. At that moment, I heard Lulu start yapping hysterically, followed by a deep, woof. Someone in the Herman's yard was shouting. I was out the patio door before I was conscious of moving. Chaka had jumped the fence and was in our backyard. He was at the foot of the mimosa tree, looking up with fierce intensity. Lulu, deciding Chaka should not be even closer to Lulu's sacred territory, was giving it all she had by way of negative reinforcement. I was surprised, shocked, to see Chaka in our yard. With some vague idea of rescuing Moosey, I started across the yard. I wasn't running, but I was certainly walking very briskly.
Ro, Peggy called. Slow down, be calm.
I resented this until I understood she was warning me Chaka might become more agitated. I froze. I admit, I was scared. The dog had never been anything but quiet, well-behaved, and friendly. I heard our patio door opening behind me. Robin appeared at my side. I assumed he'd walked slowly because I wasn't going to look away from the large dog to verify that.
Hey, boy, Robin said in an easy voice. What you got up in the tree?
Chaka turned his head to look at Robin. He wasn't growling. Chaka, not Robin. And I thought that was a good sign.
Moosey, I said very quietly. I'm coming around to your yard, Peggy said,
and I wondered why she didn't jump the fence like Chaka must have done. From our bedroom window, I'd watched Peggy vault over once when Chaka's ball had landed in our yard. She'd retrieved it handily. Robin strolled up to Chaka, still talking in that relaxed voice about what a good dog Chaka was. Though I was skeptical at the moment, I realized it was true that Chaka, though focused on Moosey, didn't seem especially hostile. He gave Robin a glance when Robin reached his side, as if to say,
You see what the problem is?
Robin looked up in the mimosa tree, which had begun to shed its beautiful ferny leaves.
I see her, he told Chaka, but I don't think she can hear you, big guy.
Peggy must have made record time running out her front door and to the far side of our house to enter through the gate. In a firm voice, she said,
Chaka, stand down.
Chaka glanced at Peggy and whined. Peggy repeated her command, this time sternly. Chaka sat. Peggy took a deep breath before she said,
Chaka, come.
Slowly, his head down, Chaka went to Peggy and sat before her, exactly like a child who's been caught raiding the cookie jar. Oh, thank God, I thought. I don't know what I had feared would happen exactly, but I was glad it hadn't.
Chaka, heel!
Peggy walked to our gate. The dog followed her without hesitation. Robin and I looked at each other with vast relief. At least one crisis had been quickly resolved. Now that Chaka had left the yard, Robin began talking to Moosey, who was peering down at us, obviously anxious. I didn't think Moosey could hear Robin talking, but she could see that Robin was extending a friendly hand to her.
She began creeping down the branches, darting looks over to the Herman yard. Since Lulu hadn't stopped barking and was running up and down the fence, for a second I envied Moosey, who couldn't hear the noise. At long last, I heard one of the Coens emerge. Deborah spoke sharply to Lulu, whose agitation about Chaka had gradually abated. Now that the terrible menace in our backyard had vanished, Lulu consented to go inside, having successfully defended her territory. No voices, no barking, no agitation. The quiet was a relief. Moosey continued down the tree until she was close enough for Robin to touch her. He scratched her head. The cat began to purr, and she didn't stop, even when Robin lifted her off the branch and held her to his chest. He began carrying the little cat to our patio door. I was about to follow him when Peggy appeared in her own yard. She waved me over. Reluctantly, I joined her at the fence. I didn't know what to say, so I didn't say anything. Peggy looked, I couldn't decide. Protective? Abashed? She opened by saying the right thing. I'm so glad Moosey wasn't hurt. I nodded. Ridgebacks are very protective. Moosey is a threat? I sounded skeptical, which I was. In Chaka's mind, he doesn't have any issue with your cat until Moosey gets close to our fence. I thought of several things to say, and I picked carefully. The fence is ours, too, I said. I understand that Chaka doesn't know that, but we can't risk Moosey being killed when she goes outside. Absolutely, Peggy said, nodding with vigor. We've been working on Chaka's training ever since we got him. He's always been a very good dog. I had to give her that. She looked grateful. Lena had joined Peggy. She looked miserable. Until now, I'd never understood how much the dog meant to them, though I should have. After all, the Coens had bought Lulu a little British coat last Christmas, and they made her wear it when they walked her in bad weather. Though the Hermans didn't express their affection in such an elaborate way, they adored Chaka just as much. We'll keep up working with him, Lena assured me. The edge of desperation in her voice made me very uncomfortable. They were both looking at me as though they feared I'd call animal control any minute. After all, what had Chaka actually done? He hadn't barked, aside from that one deep woof, and he hadn't lunged up the tree, and he hadn't growled at Moosey or at me. I began to relax. But there was a point to be made. What I'm worried about is when Sophie is bigger and walking and she wants to go in the backyard to play, I said. How will the dog see Sophie? As another threat? You understand we can't have that. That was plain can be. That gives us a long time to keep working with him, Lena said, her shoulders losing their tension. In his year with us, this is the only time he's done something like this. Peggy met my eyes, relief all over her face. Thanks, Ro. I nodded. As I turned to go inside, I wondered if I'd made the right decision. Chaka may have literally crossed the line only once, but with Sophie, once would be too much. I yelled, Robin, the minute I shut the door behind me. I'm in here, he called in a very hushed tone. I followed the sound of his voice to his office, wondering what else could possibly be wrong. At first glance, everything looked fine. Moosey was curled up on Robin's armchair. Robin was behind his desk, holding the baby monitor, which was blessedly silent. I said, what happened? When I came in, I went to the kitchen for a drink, and the helper guy was in there. I could swear he was up to something. I had to sit down, and luckily there was another armchair available. Like what? I said. He was over in the corner of the counter where you drop your purse. I think he was looking in the drawers over there. I was bewildered. What can we do? Tell Arnie? Confront the guy? Call the police? Robin shook his head. I don't know. I hate to call the police. I don't think he actually took anything. It's not against the law to open a drawer. I nodded. I was doing a lot of that today. And if we confront him, what good would that do? He'd just say, I did no such thing, or I saw a roach run under her purse and I was trying to kill it for her. Right again, and ew. But we can't do nothing. Robin looked gloomy. So telling Arnie is our best option. Something finally went right. Just then, Arnie came in the room with his invoice.
Tracked you down, he said cheerfully. We're nearly done, Mr. Crusoe. One window isn't secure yet because I don't have all the parts I need. I'll have to come back tomorrow morning, but it should only take me about 5 minutes.
Great, Robin said.
Then you'll have the system working.
We have to talk to you about something.
Okay,
Arnie said slowly.
What's on your mind?
I don't know how I expected Arnie to react to what Robin told him.
Whatever I might have predicted, Arnie surprised me.
The coroner/security expert stood with his head bowed for a long moment. Then he took a deep breath and looked Robin square in the eye.
The guy's been my employee for a long time, he said. He's been in some trouble before, and I should have fired him then. But he's a great worker, and I like him a lot. I'll have to let him go now. I'm sorry this caused you concern.
Arnie had made a bad choice, but it seemed clear he was trying to rectify it. My eyes met Robin's, and I gave a tiny shrug.
Okay, Arnie, Robin said. I want the guy to leave now. It scares me that he was even inside. Please be sure he doesn't have any access to our house. Oh, absolutely not, Arnie said hastily. He won't know what code you're using for your system, and it'll be up and running early tomorrow morning. I'll get him to sit out in the truck while we settle up.
He laid the invoice down in front of Robin and left the room hurriedly, his head bent as though he were thinking furiously. Somehow, I don't feel much better, I said.
What? He gave us an explanation and offered to correct the situation.
His words were convincing, but his tone wasn't.
We can't give him the third degree over his tone.
Robin wasn't being a smartass, he was being practical. When Sophie gets up, let's put her in the car seat and take a ride. I'd like us to be out of the house and doing something fun.
Okay by me,
Robin said.
I don't know how much work I'm going to get done anyway.
We talked about his book for a little while, and he told me what the holdup was in his thought process. I'd already learned Robin didn't want me to offer a solution. He just wanted me to listen. I could certainly do that. I was always interested in how his mind worked. In a few minutes, I heard Sophie howl. She'd had the worst bowel movement in the history of baby bowel movements. It was amazing how something so disgusting could come out of someone so cute. I must say, it seemed to have made her happy. She was making cheerful little noises and pumping her legs while I changed her, which added considerably to the mess. Finally, I got her bottom clean, the changing table clean, and then my hands. Robin was ready to put Sophie in her car seat. We stopped by my mother's so she and John could see the baby. I was sure John would get well much more quickly if he could see the magic baby. We only stayed a few minutes so we wouldn't tire John. But while we were there, he mentioned coming over at least 3 times. It was so nice being out together, and the weather was so pretty, we stopped off at the Finstermeyer's house after I noticed that both Beth and George were at home.
Hey, Ro, haven't actually laid eyes on you since the baby came, Beth said.
George was sitting in the family room with a book in his hands, but he put it down and rose to greet us. They both said the appropriate things about Sophie, Beth admiring Sophie's red hair, and George saying she was pretty like her mom, which made me laugh. We accepted their invitation to sit.
I know Philip is over here a lot, I said. I hope he's being a good guest.
The best, Beth told me, smiling. He's a good kid, Ro.
We like him, George said.
We talked about Josh and Philip's chances on the track team. We didn't need to worry about Jocelyn. She was an excellent athlete at every sport she tried.
Robin said.
Arnie Petrosian installed our security system today. Arnie's a nice guy, isn't he?
George smiled.
When we decided we needed one, we knew he was having trouble making ends meet because his bills from Helena's illness were just incredible. And then the funeral was expensive. They always are. Our church took up a donation to help him with it.
This was a very different picture of Arnie's finances than we'd gotten from Arnie. He said he'd been a friend of the previous owners of our house, the Martinezes, I said. Did they go to your church too? Yes, they did, Beth said. In fact, Lori hired Arnie to repaint their bathroom, and David hired him to pressure wash the brick. He knows how to do a lot of handy stuff, I said, trying not to sound envious.
Hey, said Robin mildly. I know how to change a light bulb.
I smiled at him. You'll do, I said. Do you two know his assistant? He made us pretty anxious, and we asked Arnie not to let him return to the house. The Finstermeyers looked at each other, astonished. Beth said, I don't remember the guy. I remember Arnie had an assistant, but as far as picturing him, I'm really sorry you were worried.
George said, if we've steered you wrong, we did it in good faith. We've been happy with our system, and Arnie needed the job.
We let them know we didn't blame them at all, for anything. When we were back in the car, Sophie looking sleepy in her car seat, I looked forward to going into our quiet house and throwing some supper together, and then maybe reading. Or maybe having some adult time with Robin. Or both. When we were home, and Sophie and all her baby paraphernalia were unloaded, I unlocked the front door and went inside. Robin, carrying the baby, was right behind me. The minute I stepped inside, I knew something was wrong. I came to an abrupt stop. Back up, Robin, I said. Get out of the house.
What?
Someone's broken in. He didn't say, are you sure, or push past me to see for himself. And that was another thing I loved about Robin. He returned to the car, got the baby front carrier out, and shrugged into it, inserting Sophie in the pouch. While he did this, I called the police. The first thing the dispatcher said was, get out of the house and don't go back in. I assured her we wouldn't. We waited in the driveway. I was very anxious and very angry. Our lives, and more importantly, our baby's life, had become unpredictable and laced with danger. This had to stop. I hadn't met the patrolman who answered the call. He was a very handsome young man of Asian heritage. Of course, I only noticed his good looks in passing, since I was a married woman. He was quickly joined by Kathy Trumbull in her unmarked car. I was very surprised to see Kathy back on duty. Surely she ought to be taking a leave of absence or something.
You're the homeowners, the patrolman said. I nodded. Is there any other family member inside the house?
My brother lives with us, but he's gone.
Pets?
They have a cat, Kathy said shortly. Let's go in. Ro, you all get behind the car at least. It would be better if you got farther away. Kathy looked very tense. It was only when they both drew their guns that I realized the gravity of the situation. There really was a chance the intruder was still in the house. Not more gunfire, I thought. Please, no. Robin and I retreated to the Cohens' front yard. Robin had one arm wrapped about Sophie in the carrier, and the other arm he wrapped around me.
How upset would you be if we moved somewhere else?
I thought Robin was joking at first, but he meant it. Chapter 20. I had no ready answer for him, but sooner or later I'd have to respond. Right now, I had enough trouble on my plate without making a life-changing decision, while the police were actually in our house with guns drawn. The Herman sisters came out in their front yard with Chaka on a leash. And the Cohens joined us, minus Lulu, though she could be heard making a racket in their house. Deborah was clearly terrified, but Jonathan was angry.
I don't know what's going on in your house, Robin, but this should not be happening in our neighborhood. Everything was quiet until you moved in.
Robin took a deep breath. He's not a guy who loses his temper easily, but he was right on the brink.
Our house got broken into, Jonathan.
He said the name the same way he'd say asshole.
I don't think that we're responsible for that. And this happened in daylight. I don't suppose with all your watching out windows and telling police you'd seen the wrong person, you happened to actually notice a criminal breaking into our house?
I looked in the other direction because I didn't want to see Jonathan's face or Deborah's. Unsurprisingly, the Coens stomped back into their house, trailing anger like crepe paper streamers. As Lena and Peggy joined us, Lena said, "It's hard to imagine a robbery in broad daylight on a middle-class street like this, right?" "Yes," I said glumly. "It certainly is." I knew it couldn't be a mistake that this mysterious incident had happened right after the terrible events of the previous week. "I'm so sorry," Peggy said. Chaka looked up at her, perhaps hearing the distress in her voice.
"Peggy, we weren't there and we're unhurt," Robin said. "We're okay."
It was far from okay, but we hadn't been attacked or injured, and that was enough. Just then, Josh brought Philip home. I could see them both gaping at the open door of the house, the two cars parked askew in front, and our little cluster in the Cohen's yard. Philip jumped out and hurried over to us, while Josh waited in the car, peering out anxiously.
"What's up?" Philip said.
His eyes went from me to the baby to Robin, assuring himself that we were all well.
"We came home to find the house had been entered," Robin said. "Ro, is there a big mess?"
He'd just thought of his office and all our books and the computer with his work in progress. Who wouldn't? "Not too bad," I said untruthfully. By the time Kathy and the new patrolman came out of the house, guns holstered, whew, I felt we'd been standing outside an hour. My phone told me it had been 7 minutes.
"It's clear. You want to come have a look-see? Tell us if you notice anything missing?" Kathy said.
Clearly, Kathy wasn't going to talk about our shared ordeal in the hospital parking lot. And given the circumstances, I couldn't think of anything tactful to say. Time to keep my mouth shut. Now that new guy was closer, I saw that his nameplate read Dan. I remembered that a Sadie Dan had been valedictorian 3 years ago at Lawrenceton High. Probably a sister. Officer Dan began walking around the house, looking for signs of, well, I didn't know what he was looking for. We followed Kathy into the house. As I'd seen when I'd first opened the door, the living room was a wreck. The couch cushions were on the floor, the kitchen drawers were open and their contents strewn around. But they weren't ripped up. Whatever the searcher had been looking for, it hadn't been something he or she suspected would be concealed in some elaborate fashion. Philip went directly to his room and returned within 2 minutes.
"No problem in there," he said,
sounding surprised and relieved. Robin lit out for his office, with Sophie necessarily along for the ride. He, too, was happy to report that his office had been left pristine. But our bedroom had been tossed. I groaned. So much to put away. At least the bathroom was still orderly. We were thunderstruck when we saw Sophie's room. It was a wreck. Robin unstrapped Sophie, handed her to me, and he and Philip began silently righting the crib, restoring the bedding, picking up the stuffed animals and the diapers and the tiny clothes, setting the rocking chair back on its base. I'd spent hours arranging that room while I waited for her birth. I started crying, and I wasn't ashamed of it. Finally, I retreated to the living room to spare myself more misery. I was looking around helplessly, trying to find a place to sit with Sophie. Kathy pulled one of the armchairs upright and replaced the cushions. "Thank you," I said, absurdly grateful. "Kathy, I don't understand this at all. Nothing's missing, at least nothing that wasn't already missing. Robin's keys and his old sweater. And the only rooms wrecked were this one, our bedroom, and Sophie's room.
Why?
Can you think of anything that would, I don't know, group those rooms together? Kathy righted a chair for herself.
I thought and thought, and then it came to me.
It should have been obvious immediately.
Those are the rooms Virginia was in, I said. She didn't need to go in Robin's office or Philip's room. By the way, did you get any useful information off her phone?
I just threw that in there to see if I could learn something, Kathy said. That's police business, not yours. You've got enough trouble of your own without taking on more.
That was for sure.
Can you tell me who has a key to your house? Kathy said this in a matter-of-fact way, but as she waited for my answer, she was very serious.
Me and Robin, Philip, of course, and my mom has a key in case of emergency, I said.
That's all. No maids?
We're always here to let them in.
Did you have the locks changed when you moved in?
No,
I started to add.
Why would I?
But the words never left my mouth. Arnie Petrosian might have a key from his friendship with Lori Martinez.
I was racked with indecision.
Would it be wrong to mention this to the police?
Officer Dan strolled in and stood beside Kathy's chair. The next question he asked solved my dilemma.
I see you have a brand new security system, he said.
How'd you know it was brand new?
The manual is still stuck behind the keypad.
Oh, yeah. Arnie Petrosian and his assistant were here this afternoon installing it.
He said he knew the Martinez's pretty well. I put a little emphasis on the last two words, hoping they'd get my drift.
He did.
Kathy looked thoughtful.
It was his assistant who bothered us, I said.
How so?
Kathy was tapping on her phone.
Robin was pretty sure he'd been going through my purse or the kitchen drawers while he was alone in the kitchen area.
What was his name?
Dan was eager. Arnie never introduced him.
Kathy looked as if she didn't think much of my brains. And Robin didn't call us, she said.
He wasn't 100% sure. So we talked to Arnie about him, and Arnie acted kinda weird, but he said he'd fire him.
Arnie would fire the assistant, I said to clarify.
So tell me, Dan said, since you just got this system installed, why didn't you set it when you left the house this afternoon?
He didn't have one part or something, so it's not active yet. He said he was coming back tomorrow morning first thing.
Kathy and Dan, what was his first name? Both gave me the same look, as if I were the dumbest creature on God's green earth. I didn't think I deserved that much scorn. I trusted an elected official of the county, and after all, getting a home security system was a good thing. When Kathy and Dan went to the door, I followed them. Standing in the open doorway, Kathy reminded me someone would be by to dust for prints in about a half hour.
And for God's sake, when Arnie comes back to finish, pick a code and arm the system, she added.
We will.
As they walked to their cars, I stepped outside with them. Despite all my troubles, it was a beautiful day. A car pulled into the curb and my friend Angel got out. She had Lorna with her and she extricated her toddler from the huge car seat and expertly balanced the child on one hip. Since Lorna was 3 years old, that was quite a load, but Angel could handle it easily.
Whoa!
Lorna said as she and Angel neared us. That was as close as Lorna could get to Ro, and it had stuck. Truly her mother's daughter, Lorna exhibited no excitement or enthusiasm when she recognized me.
Yeah?
Angel said, looking at the patrol car and the unmarked car. Kathy and Officer Dan stood still in our driveway. It was like the two officers had spotted a dangerous animal. They both looked cautious and wary.
Break in, I said inaccurately.
Kathy corrected me instantly.
Not a break-in. Some unauthorized person came in with a key.
Angel Youngblood, this is Detective Kathy Trumbull and Officer Dan.
Cleve Dan,
he said, and I felt relieved. At last, I knew his name.
I know Ms. Youngblood,
Kathy said. She didn't sound happy about it. We met when someone tried to snatch her purse from her car while she was getting gas.
I stopped him, Angel told me. Not that I had ever doubted it.
She gave him a trip to the emergency room, Kathy said.
Angel tilted her head toward Lorna.
My daughter was in the car.
I understand, I said with enough energy to startle the officers. I'd gotten in touch with my inner savage now. I was completely on Angel's page.
Ms. Teagarden here didn't report a man her husband found going through things in their kitchen,
Cleve Dan said, inviting Angel to join him in the club of people who found that ridiculous.
She can report or not as she wants.
Angel's look would have squashed a bug.
You got a security system? She asked me, inclining her head to the Spartan shield sign Arnie had planted in our front flower bed.
It seemed like a good thing to do, but it won't be ready to arm until tomorrow.
It's pretty interesting that someone came in the day before the system was going to go active.
She made sure the two police officers heard her. Lorna had been quiet all this time, but now she said,
Down, Mama.
Sugar, we're just stopping off to check on our friend, Angel said. We've got to fix supper for your dad.
Angel looked from Lorna to me.
We were just on our way home with our groceries when we saw the police cars.
Edamame?
Lorna said hopefully, and I hope my jaw didn't drop too far. Kathy and Cleve Dan looked startled.
Sure, honey, we'll have edamame, and some fruit, and maybe some tofu, or pineapple. You want that?
Wonton noodles?
Lorna had trouble with the noodles, but it came out recognizable.
Sounds good.
Angel smiled down at Lorna, and her face transformed. As she turned to leave, she slipped me a wink, and I grinned back at her. Cleve Dan watched Angel until she buckled Lorna into her car seat and left.
He'd obviously never met Shelby, her husband. Not that Angel needed anyone to run interference for her. She and Shelby had done bodyguard work before coming to Lawrenceton. When she'd gone and I had the full attention of Kathy and Cleve Dan, I told them something I'd just remembered. Overshadowed by the discovery of the telephone in my purse was the fact that we'd found it because we'd been searching for Robin's keys. I mentioned them before when you were asking about missing things, but the keys have only been missing since Robin went to BoucherCon. He's sure he left them here.
And you just now remembered that?
I had had it with the sarcastic cops.
Yes, I just now did, I snapped and stomped into the house.
There was nothing more I wanted than to share a good gripe with Robin. But it was not to be. Sophie began crying the minute we stepped inside. I had to wait until later that night, after supper and Sophie's bath, before Robin and I got to talk. Philip had gone to Sarah's house after taking his turn with the dishes, but not without ostentatiously checking the calendar to make sure it was his day. After he'd questioned me 3 times in a row in previous weeks, I'd marked the calendar so there couldn't be any dispute. I told him about my conversation with Amina, which seemed a month ago instead of the day before. I had left a voicemail on Levon's work phone since he'd wanted to know who had recommended Virginia to my mother. I hadn't heard back, but I hadn't expected to. That was a dead end. Robin decided to take my keys to get another set made, first thing in the morning.
I called about getting the locks changed, but the locksmith can't come for 2 weeks. I'll need keys in the meantime. I'm giving up on my original set, he said. Maybe a year from now we'll find it in the lint trap of the dryer.
Or the bottom of the fruit basket. I got up to check the basket while I was thinking of it. Of course, the keys weren't there. We picked out a code for the security system, which turned out to be a longer discussion than I'd imagined. The number had to be one we'd both remember, and it couldn't be super obvious, like Sophie's birthday. But we finally came to an agreement. Tomorrow night, the shield will protect us, I said, quoting the brochure Arnie had left. Will you feel safer?
To an extent, but we're changing the locks, too. I'm taking care of my family in any way I can.
I gave Robin a fervent hug. He returned it with the same feeling. We speculated for about 5 minutes on who might have broken in. Excuse me,
unlocked and strolled into our house. And why? But then we abandoned that fruitless discussion to do something much more agreeable. I think anyone would admit that we had had a trying day. But at the end of it, I felt content and safe with Robin. Chapter 21. After Philip had left the next morning to go work out with Josh, we had a visitor. Another visitor. Arne Petrosian had shown up at 8:30 before I was even dressed to put the final touch on our security system. I heard Robin tell him, "We had an intruder yesterday." There was a brief silence.
"No," Arne said.
"Was anything taken?"
"Not that we've been able to find, but the police think he had a key."
"You're going to have your locks changed as soon as possible, right? I know a good locksmith."
"Thanks, but I've already put in a few calls."
Their voices faded as they entered Philip's room, the one needing the component Arne hadn't had yesterday. Arne was as good as his word. He was through in 5 minutes, and I heard the two men talking as Robin walked Arne out. I got dressed and brushed my hair and teeth as quickly as I could, because I just knew we were going to have more callers. Our house was as busy as an airport these days. Aubrey Scott, our priest, arrived at 9 o'clock. He'd called earlier to make sure you're at home, which gave us a much-needed heads up. We'd put everything back together the evening before with Philip's help and Sarah's, but there were still odds and ends to replace. I worked on that while Robin abandoned his computer to tidy the kitchen. Aubrey was our friend, our priest, and a great guy. He probably wouldn't have cared at all if I'd come to the door in my bathrobe and the breakfast dishes had been strewn on the counter. But I cared. Robin did too. As we swapped greetings, I really looked at Aubrey for the first time in a while. He was more serious than he had been before the awful events of the year before, and there was something luminous in his face that hinted Aubrey had undergone a spiritual earthquake. I thought he might bless us, which would be very non-Episcopalian first thing in the morning, but he just said, "Hi." After the mandatory offering of a drink, we invited Aubrey to have a seat. Our priest was always busy, so I knew he hadn't come to engage in idle chit-chat. "You don't know how much I appreciate Emily's help when I was so sick," I said. I didn't add how surprised I'd been that she'd given it.
"You won Emily's heart by coming to our daughter's rescue when she was abducted,"
Aubrey said simply.
"Emily and I have both gone through some changes as a result of that ordeal."
I felt very awkward. There's a reason Episcopalians are called the Frozen Chosen. To gain a little time, I took my glasses off, the blue ones, and polished them with the hem of my t-shirt. "I'm glad all the kids are okay," I said. "They might have buried emotional problems from the ordeal, but they'd all recovered physically. I hope Liza is happy. Emily said she's much better placed now," if I remembered correctly. I'd been in and out of that conversation.
"She is. The new school and a new group of friends have been the best thing in the world for her. I don't know if the private school exactly prepares Liza for the real world, but I know she met the real world last year, and she doesn't need another dose this soon."
"Of course," I said. I wondered why Aubrey was here. He could simply be showing that he recognized we'd had a crisis. That would be welcome. But I felt he was working his way toward something. I couldn't have been more surprised when he came out with it.
"Do you have any idea when the funeral will be?"
Aubrey looked at us with gentle inquiry on his face. "Funeral?" I drew a blank.
"For Tracy Beale, the woman who was killed in your yard,"
Aubrey added, in case we might have forgotten. I didn't dare look at Robin.
"We would be the last to know,"
Robin said slowly, not bothering to conceal his astonishment.
"Tracy Beale was a stalker. She was going to be tried for making a serious attempt to kill Roe. She came in our house, uninvited, in the night, into the room of our daughter."
Aubrey was clearly troubled.
"I understand your dislike of this woman, he said. But try to find it in your hearts to forgive her, or at least to have compassion for her mental illness. I realize wanting to feel those things doesn't guarantee it'll happen overnight, but it's a goal to work towards. I glanced up at Robin. We both nodded cautiously. We weren't buying into this, but we could let Aubrey know we'd registered his advice. I was sure he was about to leave, but Aubrey had more surprises to pull out of his ministerial hat. Ro, I wondered if you'd go with me to see the mother of Virginia Mitchell. Why? I couldn't think of a single reason this would appeal to me. She's frightened for her daughter's safety. You know this how? I called Mrs. Mitchell to tell her we were praying for the safe return of her daughter. Robin's eyes met mine, and he shrugged, leaving it up to me. He didn't look happy, though. How far away does she live? I said, playing for time.
About a 20 or 30 minute drive away, if it's not rush hour, Aubrey said.
I hesitated, dreading the additional wear and tear on my emotions such a visit was sure to cause. But this was my priest asking. I hadn't thought of what Virginia's mother must be enduring, and I felt bad about that. But it was more a dull, dutiful guilt than a sharply felt pang. All right, Aubrey, I said with no enthusiasm whatsoever. We'll have to coordinate it with Sophie. If we leave right after I feed her, we'll need to be back in 2 hours. Aubrey looked pleased. Not at all to my surprise, he said he was ready to go any time I was. This morning would be okay, I said. I think she'll be up in half an hour at the most. The sooner to get it over with, I thought. Sophie woke up grouchy. I could tell from Robin's face he'd been hoping to get a little work in today since he'd missed so many hours this past week. I suggested hesitantly that I might take her with me. Aubrey didn't look unwilling, though he also didn't look enthusiastic. But Robin balked.
Ro, you won't want a crying baby on deck for a conversation that's sure to be uncomfortable, he pointed out.
So after I'd given Sophie my all, in the way of milk at least, Aubrey and I drove away. I was preoccupied. Sophie was still acting mad at the world. I was brooding about her unprecedented mood and about dumping her on Robin. Could she have gas? Maybe she'd started cutting a tooth, though surely it was too early for that. Oh gosh, maybe she'd caught the flu. But she hadn't felt hot. There were too many possibilities to count. I kept telling myself that Robin had promised he'd call if she didn't calm down. Up until this morning, she'd been a reasonable baby. Now I knew how lucky we'd been. I made myself have a conversation with Aubrey as he maneuvered through the traffic. We talked about John and how soon he might be able to come back to church. We talked about the very strong-willed lady who was the head of the Christmas bake and craft sale and wondered who'd cry this year when she bore down. Aubrey had heard that John David was dating Lizanne and he wished them well. Maybe the same elements that had made John David's marriage to the volatile, now deceased, Poppy so unstable would make a solid relationship with the immensely calm Lizanne Sewell. Aubrey never said anything bad about anyone, but he was realistic about human nature.
How does being a mother compare to what you thought it would be?
Aubrey asked. We were at a stoplight. The kids in the next car were staring at Aubrey's collar and seemed to be having a heated argument about what my presence in his car might mean. I don't know that I ever tried to imagine it, I said slowly. I was so sure I couldn't be a mother, I didn't think about it. I can tell you that my whole view of the world changed.
How so?
There are things that'll be good for your baby and things that'll not be good. Just two categories. There are people who mean no harm to your baby and people who might hurt her. Just two kinds. Then there's the moral things you have to teach, and that's a lot harder. I'm working on a policy. I bet Robin is too.
I don't understand.
Well, do you teach her to defend herself, or do you teach her that striking other people is wrong? Do you teach her to keep her thoughts to herself, or do you teach her to speak up for her beliefs and maybe get hurt in consequence?
If Sophie is gay, do we teach her to be open about it? Or do we warn her that some people will want to beat her or kill her for being who she is? Aubrey looked a little taken aback.
I haven't ever thought about the world in those either-or terms.
Though I'm simplifying, those are the choices. You can raise your child to be strong and outspoken, which is brave and honest, but the consequences of being brave and honest can be dire.
Aubrey smiled in a wry way.
Or you can teach your daughter to keep her own counsel and lay low. She'll live a life that may be unhappy and untrue, but probably she'll be safe.
Exactly. So that's the kind of thing I worry about now. Before I held Sophie for the first time, I'd never thought about any of that.
So your biggest surprise is how much thinking you have to do about the effect of your words on Sophie?
No. My biggest surprise is how primal I feel about her. I would die for her. I would kill for her. Without a doubt. Without hesitation.
Strong statement, Aubrey said, trying to sound less startled than he was.
You adopted Liza, but it's like she's your own, I said. Don't you feel that way too?
Well, no. I would defend her to the death.
Aubrey spoke deliberately and carefully.
Aside from that, I let her know what my faith tells me I should do, what every Christian should do.
And then you just see what happens? He nodded.
Liza has already had a lot to contend with. Emily says she told you about her first husband.
I nodded. I had no idea. It's great that she survived it and she's still a good person.
Emily's a very strong woman. We're not sure how much Liza remembers, but she saw some things she shouldn't have seen. Then there was the problem with Liza's reading disability, which she overcame.
I hadn't known about that.
And then the bullying at school. I knew, at least theoretically, how cruel children can be, but I have to say, at first, I found their inhumanity beyond belief.
Did you want to whop them one?
Yes, he said without hesitation. Some days. But I couldn't decide if the venom came from their parents or was, well, natural to them.
When I talked to Liza's bullies and their parents, it had disturbed me, too. I wondered how a mother could bear to realize that her child was naturally cruel. I couldn't even imagine. In contrast to that black pit, visiting Virginia Mitchell's mother didn't seem so bad. Marcy Mitchell owned a neat small house on a street filled with similar houses. It was located in one of the older neighborhoods outside Truman, once a little town located in what had been open country between Lawrenceton and Atlanta. Older is a relative term in this vast conglomeration of bedroom communities. The house had been built 15 to 20 years ago. Maybe Truman had once had a character of its own, but now it was homogenized. We'd passed a Chili's and a Napa Valley Auto Parts and a CVS pharmacy before we turned into the subdivision. It was full of curb-parked cars, basketball goals, tricycles discarded in the yard, and the other signals indicating Americans were going about their lives in a normal way. Mrs. Mitchell's house was different. There was one car parked in her driveway. The one-car garage was closed. The curtains were closed, giving the house a blind look. She expects us? I said dubiously. Maybe she went to work or something.
She said she was staying home this week in case news came about Virginia,
Aubrey said.
I told her I might drop by.
Might drop by?
I may have sounded a little sarcastic.
Aubrey looked uncomfortable.
I told her I'd come today and I might bring you with me.
Aubrey, what's going on here?
He looked even more uncomfortable.
We'll see, Aubrey said, and then he crossed the little yard to the front door. I felt obliged to follow. He was my friend and my priest, but to say I was unhappy would be a huge understatement. Aubrey rang the doorbell, and in just a few seconds it opened. Through the glass storm door, we looked at a woman I assumed was Marcy Mitchell. She was wearing blue jeans and a flowered blouse. Her hair had been straightened and had a glossy sheen, unlike her daughter's short and natural do. But I could see the resemblance of daughter to mother, the shape of the face and mouth, the way the eyes were set. "Come in, please," our hostess said, opening the storm door.
"You must be that preacher?"
"Yes, I'm Aubrey Scott."
"They call you father?"
"Some people do," Aubrey said, smiling. "You can call me Aubrey, or whatever makes you comfortable."
"This is Aurora Tea Garden, Mrs. Mitchell."
He said that with a kind of heavy significance. I could practically hear a ta-da.
"You're the lady with the baby."
Since she was holding the glass door open, we had to step past her into the living room. It was dark after the bright day outside. I could barely make out the silhouette of someone else sitting in the room.
"Yes," I said belatedly. "Sophie's 2 months old."
"How is Sophie?" said the person on the couch. It was like having a bucket of cold water thrown on my face. I adjusted to the gloom, and my eyes confirmed what my ears had already told me. In front of me, very much alive and not visibly hurt, was Virginia Mitchell. Chapter 22. I've had some shocks in my life, but this certainly ranked as one of the most severe. I had so many things to say to Virginia, and her mother, and Aubrey, that the words clogged up in my throat, like too many people trying to get through a doorway at the same time. Probably just as well. I was very angry.
"Aubrey," I said, "tell me you didn't know about this."
"I give you my word, I had no idea she'd be here."
He sounded shaken too, more than a little. I took 2 steps to position myself right in front of Virginia, who stood. Maybe she wasn't sure what I was going to do. I wasn't sure either. I took a couple of deep breaths before I spoke.
"I'm relieved you're alive, Virginia, and you look like you're okay. But you should have told me earlier."
"We didn't want you to call the police," Marcy Mitchell said. "Can I get you a drink? Tea? Sweet or unsweet?"
This was just nuts. I closed my eyes and took another moment. When I opened them, all three were staring at me hopefully.
"You realize that my husband and I are under suspicion for having killed Tracy Beale? And possibly you?"
I asked Virginia directly. Her eyes shifted away, not looking at me directly.
"I'm really sorry," Virginia said, and she did sound as if she regretted it.
But she didn't continue. "I'm going to explain all of that to the police as soon as I clear up a few things."
"Tell me what happened," I said. Even to my own ears, I sounded angry.
"Please sit," Marcy said. "We'll just talk about it. Virginia's been so upset. You'll understand."
I very much doubted that. But okay. I sat in a very uncomfortable chair, clearly the one an unlucky family member got when all the others had been taken. It was a church chair, the folding metal kind. Aubrey was enveloped by an ancient recliner. Marcy perched by Virginia on the rusty brown couch. Marcy repeated her offer of a drink. She was determined to observe the ritual of courtesy, no matter how grotesque it seemed in this context. After Aubrey accepted a glass of unsweet, Marcy relaxed. This meeting had turned into something she could handle. I was too furious with the Mitchells to want anything of theirs. Once Aubrey had his damn tea, I raised my hand, palm up.
"Let's hear it," I said.
"Before I even start telling you, I don't know the whole story," Virginia said. "I don't know who killed that girl."
"Mm-hmm. Talk."
Virginia sighed and looked as though she wished she were miles away. "You were so sick, and Sophie was sound asleep, so I called my ex-boyfriend."
"Is his name Harrison?"
Amina had said it was a movie star name.
"Ford Harrison," Virginia said, looking at me with some surprise.
I nodded.
"Okay, what happened then?"
Ford had called me the night before to say he was sorry for the burglary, for about the millionth time. Ford got arrested a few months ago. She looked at me questioningly.
Yeah, I said. I heard something about that.
I hadn't seen him in months. When he called, I told him what I thought of his behavior, she said proudly. She was no pushover, she wanted us to know. But we talked and we talked. The next night, I thought I'd call him back. He sounded really sorry. I just missed him. Her mother scowled. I felt I knew the whole backstory from that one expression. But I had to hear the rest. I had put up bail for him, Virginia said, her back stiff, not meeting our eyes. He did something wrong, I know, but it wasn't violent, or I thought he could be an all right man. Everyone makes mistakes. Naturally. I tried to keep the sarcasm out of my voice. I didn't succeed. So Saturday night, we had another long talk, but I kept the monitor with me so I could take care of Sophie and you. I gave a jerky nod, acknowledging her words. The house was kind of still and muggy. I went in and out of the patio door a few times. I could tell a storm was blowing up. The wind and the change in the air. Getting out felt good. You left the patio door unlocked, I said. I left it unlocked. She hung her head. And I'd run out the front door to my car to grab my phone charger, and Ford pulled up just then, so I stood outside talking to him.
Oh, Virginia, her mother whispered, shaking her head.
Virginia shot Marcy a furious look.
Let's set that aside for the moment, shall we? I said, making myself sound reasonable by a huge effort of will.
Please, finish your story. I got the charger out of my car and I came back to the doorstep, so the monitor would pick up any sound Sophie made.
See, I was responsible.
She wanted me to believe. That made me feel so much better. I bit the inside of my mouth so I wouldn't snarl at her.
Ford was really upset about something that had just happened at a party. Maybe we were on the doorstep a little longer than I thought.
That woman must have come in through the patio door then, Virginia went on.
Don't tell me again you had the damn monitor, I thought.
And I was clean out of patience. After Ford left, I went back inside. I saw this woman coming into the living room from your husband's office. She was wearing Robin's old sweater. For a minute, I thought it was you. I said, Aurora? What are you doing out of bed? She kind of yelped, like I'd scared her, and she ran at me. Virginia shuddered. She knocked me down onto the carpet, and then she ran out the back door.
I could see from her face how frightened she'd been.
Wait, I said. What she'd just told us was registering. She was wearing Robin's sweater? Virginia nodded. A minor puzzle had been solved. Now I knew where the sweater had gone. But Tracy hadn't been wearing it when we'd found her. One puzzle had been replaced by another. I made a go-ahead gesture. I guess it took me a little bit to get up, kind of check myself out, make sure I was okay. I hightailed it to Sophie's room. Really quiet, because I didn't know who else might be in the house. For all I knew, there was someone else. After I found out Sophie was okay, I prayed for a second. Virginia said this quite unselfconsciously. Then I went in your room and I could hear you breathing. You sounded awful, but normal awful, you know? I could feel the heat coming from you, and I knew you had a fever. I sat down on that chair in the corner of your room and I tried to get myself together. I didn't know what to do.
How could she possibly have not known what to do?
My hands were clenched in front of me. I was holding myself down. I was about to call the police, but all of a sudden I thought, oh shit, what if she comes back in? Because the patio door and the front door were still unlocked. So I sort of crept out to the living room window, and I saw her on the ground. At least I thought it was